I'm really too moved to begin. I have to collect my thoughts first because, Susie, you were very, very moving, very moving. You described your Baba and Zaida, my parents, Aleihem HaShalom, very beautifully. I want to tell you that all of us, all their children, your mother, I, and your uncle and aunt in America, are very proud of you and your sisters, and I thank you very much for those lovely words. Ladies and gentlemen, this lecture on tolerance is totally non-political. It is. Even your laughter shows me my problem. I must tell you, it's a sign of the high degree of nervousness and edginess in this country that so many people came over to me, testing me, challenging me. What are you going to say? Because maybe it's not the right thing. I almost felt that I'm coming into hostile territory where my attackers are on both sides of the fence. But because I'm rather accustomed to that position, let me assure you, I have no partisan ends in mind. I do not refer exclusively or primarily to political controversies that seem to sweep this country with the same regularity and ferocity that hurricanes hit the Florida coast in America. Every once in a while, there's another hurricane, and here, every once in a while, there's another, well, political hurricane. You know, for us, tolerance is a problem because we are a very nervous, excitable, opinionated, strong-minded people. We take ideas seriously and we take umbrage quickly. And we are a nervous people, that's what we are. I remember it was only a short while ago that I read an article by Sir Isaiah Berlin, where he tells a story about Chaim Weizmann that I had not heard before. Many of you may know it. He says that when Chaim Weizmann was very, very ill, first president of Israel, was on his deathbed, he had a terrible cough. He was racked by a cough. And the doctor told him in Yiddish, he said to him, "Dr. Weizmann, spit up." And he said, "Aber chob nish a vem in zu spayen." I have no one to spit at. Apparently, Jews feel very uncomfortable if they have no one to spit at. But in this rather humorous tale, I don't know if the anecdote is correct or not, you have an indication of the fact that we are, as General de Gaulle said about us, a proud, and very opinionated people. And therefore, tolerance does not come easily to us. But the theme is germane to the Israeli scene as it is to the American scene. And of course, it was occasioned by the most intolerant act in the recent history of our people, namely the assassination of Prime Minister Yitzhak Rabin, Alav HaShalom. Now, I've addressed the theme of tolerance in one way or another for years. Never spoke directly on it, but I've talked around it, and I've talked about things related to it for the longest time. If I speak about it now, it's for two reasons. First, this gives me the opportunity to focus on tolerance as such, and perhaps deepen my analysis for my own self. And second, because if it is true that tolerance is important, then I should speak about it again. There's a beautiful Malbim, a parish of the Malbim, on the first verse, the first pasuk of Yeshayahu. The Sefer Yeshayahu opens up with the words, Chazon Yeshayahu ven Amotz, Asher Chaza al Yehuda v'Yerushalayim, Bimei Uziyahu, Yotam Achaz Chizkiyahu. This is the vision that Yeshayahu ben Amos saw concerning Yehuda and Yerushalayim in the days of Uziyah, Yotam, Achaz, Chizkiyahu, Malchei Yehuda. So the Malbim asks, if this is the vision, well, a man has a vision, then he wakes up. It was either in the days of King Uzziah, or King Yotam, or King Ahaz, or King Hezekiah? Why have all four kings? And the Malban answers, perhaps it came from his experience as a functioning rabbi, that Yeshayahu indeed gave this nevuah, preached it, proclaimed it in the days of King Uzziahu. But no one listened to him. So he repeated it in the days of Yotam, and hardly anyone paid attention. So he repeated it in the days of Ahaz, and again no one paid attention. So he repeated it again in the days of Hezekiah. If there's an important theme, and what you say in the theme has not yet been translated into reality and accepted, then it's important to repeat it again and again and again. So if some of you have heard me speak before about similar themes, please don't feel that it's irrelevant. The very fact that the problem still exists makes the talk relevant. As a result of that traumatic event of almost a year ago, I commissioned a group of scholars at Yeshiva University, mostly of our own faculty, but also some others, a group of scholars and educators to constitute the Commission on Judaism and Human Values. What I wanted was an attempt to search out the sources, no political preaching, no preaching, but search the Mekorot to find out what is the attitude of historic Judaism, of the Masorah, on three themes: tolerance, democracy, and what I call the ethics of dissent, how Jews ought to disagree with each other. Two groups are working on it. One on the scholarly aspects, and I told them I don't want apologetics. If there are Mekorot that go against what I'm trying to say, put it down there. But I want at least to know that in the symphony of Yahadut, there are certain notes that are important for our generation. And therefore, if we do have something that teaches us about tolerance and democracy and disagreeing agreeably, we should do it because of the sources. One group is working on the research. One group is working on educational implementation, preparing the readers that will be given to three levels: high school level, university level, and for adult education. They've been assiduously at work, and they should report within several months. This present lecture is therefore an introduction to the theme, in anticipation of what I hope and expect will be a far more exhaustive, comprehensive treatment of the subject. This lecture tonight, which I dedicate in memory of my father, my beloved father, Meir Shmuel ben Yaakov David, Olav HaShalom, tonight, as you heard, is his yahrzeit, is not a systematic treatment of the subject, but simply an effort to sketch in a number of ideas on the role of tolerance and the sources of Judaism. Because the problem is enormous, friends. It is enormous. The great philosopher Linus, have you ever heard of him? If you read the American comic strip Peanuts, you'll know who Linus is. Linus once said that there is no problem that is so big and so complicated that it can't be run away from. And this is a problem that people run away from because they feel there's hardly anything you can do about it. So let's discuss tolerance. My first premise is that tolerance is not an absolute virtue. It is not something that must prevail at all times. There are things and ideas that are simply intolerable to any decent, civilized human being. And therefore, there are examples aplenty of intolerant attitudes in Torah. The Torah tells us to be intolerant of Shvichat Damim, of Avodah Zarah, of Gilui Arayot. It tells us to be intolerant of Lashon Hara, of Rechilut, a whole bunch of things that the Torah finds objectionable, calling some of these things To'eva, which means abhorrent, certainly not to be tolerated. Nor in contemporary life should we be tolerant of terrorists, rapists, drug pushers, public nudity, muggers, a whole list of things that we should never be tolerant of. So it's not an absolute virtue. An American philosopher by the name of W.V. Quine refers to a delicate balance of tolerance. For instance, terrorism must be restrained. But on the other hand, you have to have a certain amount of due process to make sure that the man you're accusing of terrorism is indeed a terrorist. And it all depends on the limits or on the form the terrorism takes. It holds true for violence of any kind. It holds true for religion. There is always a balance when it comes to tolerance. That balance has other implications. Now, toleration, someone once said, is the greatest gift of the mind. It requires the same effort of the brain that it takes to balance oneself on a bicycle. On a bicycle, you're balancing yourself between opposing forces. An intelligent attitude to tolerance is that tolerance is on one side, but there's another side, and you have to find the correct balance. Let me give you an example from the Torah, according to Chazal, according to Rashi. This has to do with towards the end of the life of Moshe Rabbeinu, when he asks HaKadosh Baruch Hu to prepare a successor. And the successor, of course, is Yehoshua. So Moshe says, Yivkod Hashem Elokei Haruchot L'chol Basar Ish Al Ha'eda. Strange word. May Hashem, the God of the Ruchot, of spirits, appoint someone over this congregation, over this assembly. No place else in the Torah do we find that expression, Elokei Haruchot. Why does it say Elokei Haruchot? So Rashi explains, Lama ne'emar, amar lefanav, debono shel olam, galui v'yadua lefanecha da'ato shel kol echad ve'echad, ve'einan domin ze lezeh. Ruchot means opinions, attitudes. You know that this people are a very strong-minded people. Everyone has a different opinion. They are unlike each other. Therefore, Rebbeinu Shel Olam, Manei Aleihem Manhig Shehu Yehei Soveil Kol Echad VeEchad Lefi Da'ato. He should be able to accommodate everybody according to his own opinion. What Moshe was saying is, I am one kind of leader. I'm an intolerant leader. I'm an angry leader. I can't take it very often. I have to put my tent mechutz lamachaneh. I'm not a consensus leader. The people at this stage of its development needs a leader who will be more accommodating, more accessible, will understand their opinions, will make place for them, will be more tolerant. And indeed, the Rabbanu Shalom answers him. The answer, however, is not to give him a totally tolerant leader. Rather, the answer is, Kach lecha et Yehoshua ben Nun, ish asher ruach bo. A man who has ruach, not ruchot in the plural, but ruach, besamachta et yadcha alav, and you can appoint him the leader. And according to Chazal, this means, sheyuchal v'haloch keneged ruchot shel kol echad v'echad. He should understand that there are many opinions, and he should be able to tolerate them, but only within limits. He should also be able to go against the opinion of each one. To be utterly, completely tolerant is almost impossible. It's too plastic. And therefore, he wanted a leader, a Yahushua, who sheyuchal v'haloch keneged kol ruach v'roach. Again, you have a sense of balance. A similar thought is expressed in practical halachic terms in the Talmud, in Brochas Daf Nun Ches, where the Gemara says, in the Perek Haroeh, Haroeh Uchlosei Yisrael, if you see large numbers of Jews, you have to make a brocha. What is a brocha? Baruch Chacham Harazim. What an interesting brocha. You bless God who is wise, encompassing or understanding of all razim, of all secrets. Baruch Chacham Harazim, She'ein da'atam domeh zeh lezeh ve'ein partzufeihem domin zeh lezeh. That all their opinions are different. Their characters are different. Their personalities are different in the same way that their faces are different. And that means that Rabbanu Shel Olam is a God who guards the secret of Jewish survival. They are all strong-minded, yet they constitute one people. We are one people. Second, and following from that, is the idea that tolerance is real. It really is tolerance. Only intention with principle. Intention with principle, with the principle. William Buckley Jr., who is a great writer in the States, I suppose many of you have read him, says the following: how can a modern relativist exercise tolerance if he doesn't believe in anything to begin with? It's not hard to exhibit toleration towards a point of view if you have no point of view of your own with which that point of view conflicts. If you haven't got principles, it is very easy to be tolerant. But that's not tolerance. That's not tolerance. That's a slipperiness of principle. It means you simply have nothing to tolerate, nothing against which to match it and to strike it. Paradoxically, the more tolerance is, the more meaningful, the firmer are your principles. The firmer you are your principles, the more is tolerance real. That means, if you take it to its conclusion, you have a real paradox, that a person who is absolutely sure of himself, whose mind is closed to any other options, his tolerance is the most virtuous. To have a closed mind and yet an open heart, that is sovlanut. That is real tolerance, shehei sovel da'ato ruchos shekol echad v'yachad. If you believe in something wholeheartedly, if you're willing to die for it and still accept that the other person has a right to his opinion and he will be permitted to follow his own ideas, that is really tolerance. If you are totally open-minded, however, totally open-minded, if you're unsure of your own principles and feel that the other fellow's value are likely to be correct as yours are, then you're not being tolerant. You simply have a rubber spine. You're, you know, Lionel Trilling, I hope you don't believe that I'm here trying to convince you to have closed minds. I'm not really in favor of closed minds. I'm just trying to point out the paradox of it, that the firmer your principles, the more difficult and therefore the more virtuous is tolerance. Closed minds, I don't like closed minds, but open minds have a limit too. Professor Lionel Trilling, the great English expert in Columbia, one of the first Jews ever accepted to Columbia, once said that some people are so open-minded that their brains fall out. So if I overstate the case, it's not because I'm trying to say that you shouldn't think that you should always think that you're 100% right. But tolerance is a difficult virtue because it requires strong principles to begin with. Third, that having been said, it is important, it's incumbent upon us to search the sources for tolerance in Torah, remembering that the balance between them is a matter of judgment. It's always a matter of judgment, of consultation, of iyun bechoved rosh. You can't prescribe in advance for tolerance. You can give guidelines. You cannot give clear halachot, cannot give clear decisions in advance of what tolerance is. I offer several items in evidence. A halachic instance for tolerance for the individual sinner. The Gemara in Kedushin, Daf Mem Tet, says if a man approaches a woman and recites the marriage formula, but conditionally, he says, Hadayat mekudeshetli b'tabaat zu, and he says, Almanat sha'ani tzadik, I am marrying you on condition that I'm a tzadik. There are people who believe that. And he says, on condition that I'm a tzaddik. The question now is she married to him or not? I wish it was so easy. I would have saved weeks and weeks of work when I was learning Kedushin. The Gemara says she is. Even if he is a rasha gamur, he can be as wicked as they come. He can be the worst scoundrel in the world. But it's mekudeshet, according to Rambam, safek mekudeshet. But the Kedushin Atovsin, at least to some extent. Why? Why? Shema hirher b'tshuva ba'otozman, ba'otasha'ah. it is possible that at that moment that he married her and said, Amanat Shani Tzadik, he really was Maharei B'tshuva. And that hit her tshuva, that thought of tshuva, that regret that he is a Rasha Gamur, turns him into a Tzadik. But then you can't be intolerant of people who disagree with you, whom you regard as wicked, whom you regard as dreadful, whom you regard as the enemy, because you don't know what goes on in the heart and in the soul of another person. You may think you know, but you really don't. And there is a possibility that the person whom you now object to because he is so strong on an opinion and you think he's doing it because he doesn't care about you or because he's doing it for personal aggrandizement. Not so. He may not be that way. And this halakha is really an expansion of what we learn in Pirkei Avot. Have a dan et kol ha'adam l'kav zchut. You never really can judge a person severely. You must always consider that there is a good side, that maybe the better and more charitable interpretation is the correct one. Let me give you what to my mind is a striking example of tolerance for idolatry. Now, what can be worse than Avodah Zarah? But this comes concerning the incident of Rachel Imenu, when she left with her husband, with Yaakov and Leah and the children. She left her father Lavan, and we read, the Torah tells us, Vatignov Rachel et hatrafim. She stole the trafim. The trafim were small idols. Lavan, after all, was an idol worshipper, so he probably had on his shelf a whole bunch of small idols. And these may have been traveling idols, who knows what they were. She stole them. And she packed them along with the belongings, and they left. And then, of course, Lavan came, and he was looking, and almost a comical scene of an adult saying, Lama ganafte et Elohai, how can you steal my gods? This, you know the story. But let me tell you what the Zohar says. Afal gav, I'm quoting to you from the Zohar. Afal gav de Rachel ihi avdat la'akra le'la avua mi batar avodah zarah. Even though Rachel sought to take away from her father or to keep her father away from idolatry, from idol worship, it anshat, she was punished. The Lord of Viatle le Binyamin, she was not permitted to raise the child who was born to her, Binyamin. She didn't even have an hour with this child because she died in childbirth. Why was she punished? She was punished begin Sara da Bua because she caused pain to her father, Afal Gav di Itkavnat Latav, even though she meant well. Now, this is more than a lesson in filial devotion, in Kibbud Av. Because the Kibbud, you know very well the halacha that if a father does an aveir, you don't have to listen to him. Avraham was also a man who stole, who destroyed his father's idols. At this point, by this child, for this father, at this time in her life, she should not have done that to her father, even though it was idolatry. Idolatry which is meis, which is ugly, which is disgusting, silly, it's toeva. She should not have been intolerant of her own father. But she was intolerant, and look at the terrible punishment according to the Zohar, that she was not privileged to see her child Benjamin grow up, and she died in childbirth. I think it's a powerful statement about tolerance. Let me give you another example, which is worthy of thinking. This comes to us from Rabbi Yaakov Moshe Chalap, Zichrono Livracha, who was the Talmud Chaver Rav Kook. At the point when Moshe and Aaron are negotiating with Paro Melech Mitzrayim, we read, Vayikra Paro and Moshe L'Aaron Vayomer, L'chu v'zivchu le'alhechem ba'aretz. I'd like you to get out. We have enough problems with you Jews. Get out and have your ceremony, your rituals, outside the land, outside the city. V'yomer Moshe, lo nachon la'asot ken. Can't do it, Paro. Why not? Now listen. Hein nizbach et toavat Mitzrayim le'enehem v'lo yiskelunu. Do you expect us to slaughter the gods of the Egyptians, the animals, the cows, the lambs, and they won't stone us? Now, this is very difficult to understand. Paro was an autocrat. He is the absolute dictator of all Egypt. People live and die by his whim. And if he says, I want these Bnei Yisrael, these Ivrim, to go ahead and have their sacrifice, then no Egyptian would dare raise a finger against them because Paro himself was considered a god. So what was Moshe afraid of? Why did he say, V'lo Yiskelunu? The question is a good one. And that's why we look to the Aramaic translator, to Unculus. And Unculus has one word that he adds that Rabbi Yaakov Moshe Chalap makes into a major cause. He says, V'lo Yemrun Lemir Gemona. Will they not want to stone us? You hear what he's saying? We're not afraid that they're going to stone us, but they may want to stone us. And says Rabbi Chalap, that means that we will cause them a tremendous amount of irritation, a tremendous amount of tsar. And why should I be so intolerant of them? And therefore I will not accept your offer to offer make the zevach in the land in front of the Egyptians, because I don't want to be intolerant of what I know to be a narishkeit and a foolish thing, namely the idolatry of the Egyptians. Now I find this a startling, but also a refreshing kind of interpretation. Now, we all know more or less what lies at the root of intolerance. Why are people intolerant? They're intolerant because they have great principles. They may be intolerant of ideas or people because they're afraid. They may be intolerant because they're arrogant. More likely, they may be intolerant because they're diffident and they have no self-confidence, and they're afraid that the other fellow or the other idea will overwhelm them. But what is the philosophic background, the ideational underpinning of tolerance? How do you explain it? The Shaloh HaKodesh, Rabbi Shaya Levi Horowitz, who flourished in the 16th and 17th century, the author of Shnei Luchot HaBrit, the Shaloh, tells us that there is Kedusha, even in Elilim. Even idols possess a degree of holiness. The Shaloh was working in the developing tradition of the Kabbalah Sa'ari, and he held that things exist only because there's a spark of divinity in them. What is the spark of divinity in the Elilim? The fact that they are mentioned in the Torah. The Torah mentions a series of idols. That is what gives them a certain degree of Kedusha. That idea, which in itself is remarkable, is later taken up by Rav Kook and expanded to say that just as nothing in the world can exist without a divine spark, it holds true not only for things, not only for physical objects, it holds true as well for ideas. Without a kernel of truth, no ideology could survive. It will collapse into nothingness. Now, consider what that means. That any ideology, in order to exist, must contain some kernel of truth, something of redeeming value. You know the example Rav Kook gives? Fascism. Remarkable. Fascism has a kernel of truth. What is the kernel of truth of fascism? Nationalism. When you take nationalism to an extreme, you end up with fascism. Fascism is ugly, it's disgusting, it's dangerous. Nationalism, kept in bonds, is great. Cook himself was a great nationalist. So any great idea can be misulaf, it can be distorted into a dreadful idea. And every dreadful idea, if it exists at all, must have some kernel of emet or kedusha within it. That means this is in many ways a statement of making room for tolerance, because how can you be totally intolerant of something which, although you may disagree with it, does have in it a kernel of truth? Now, I ask you, how does this translate into religious differences, which is, after all, something we are all concerned with? What happens in this country and happens in America is a growing abyss, a tahum, that is beginning to separate warring camps. Is there a place for tolerance? Let me And what kind of posture should we really develop in discussing differences with other people who do not share our point of view? Let me read to you from the Maharal of Prague. I needn't tell you who the Maharal of Prague was. He was, here is a man who was one of the Gedolei HaGedolim, and he lived about 250 years ago. I'm reading to you a passage from the Be'er HaGola. I will translate only a here and there because I assume you'll all understand me. He writes as follows. Ein ra'ui l'hachik shum davar ha-mitnaged el da'ato li'ahavat ha-chakira v'yidiya. No idea should be automatically dismissed. U'befrat oto shelo kiven l'kanter rak l'hagid ha-emuna asher ito. If someone does not dare just to be difficult, not only to insult you or to tease you or to provoke you, but he really is telling you what he or she believes in. Even if it's against what we stand for in our religion. If you take someone who does not share your opinion and you make him keep quiet, you're intolerant of him, you will never clarify your own point of view, never clarify your own religious beliefs. The adraba, daber, say to him, daber, speak a chol chefzecha, ki im sotem et piv shelo yedaber, zehu moreh al chushat hadat. If you can't stand up and talk to another person about differences, that shows your argument is weak. V'lo matzino me'olam sheyu harishonim mone'im u'mochim b'davar zeh klal. We never find that the great rishonim disagreed with this principle. V'lo haya kan potzeh peh u'mitzafzeh b'davar hazeh. If you want the truth, then you must lishmoa hata'anot she'amru lefi hadat asher itam v'lo kivnu lekanter. Let people speak. Let them have their opinions and disagree with them, but let them speak. Ulakach ein ra'ui litchot divrei zulato amitnaged lo. It is simply wrong to prevent someone else from having his say. Aval ra'ui lekarev otam. That sounds very modern to my ears from someone who lived 250 years ago. And this attitude or approach of the Maharal leads me to agree with a contemporary Israeli thinker who wrote that tolerance is not, as some people believe, a necessary evil. Look, we live in a world where so many different opinions, a cauldron of different ideas, so you have no choice but to be accommodating or to listen to others. No, nope. He says tolerance is not a necessary evil, but a value in and of itself. It makes freedom of speech and criticism possible. Such criticism helps you to uncover errors and weak points in your own thinking and thus contributes to your welfare. It causes each side to engage in self-criticism that can only make it stronger and more appealing in the marketplace of ideas. So we are not bereft of sources for a tolerant approach. On a communal level, there's a famous tshuva by the Netziv, Rabbi Naftali Tzvi Yehuda Berlin, who, as you know, was the third and famous Rosh Yeshiva of Volozhin. The Netziv writes as follows in his tshuvas, in his Sheilot Tshuvot Meshiv Davar, a short paragraph. He writes here about the developing idea of austrit, of having separate communities, of not joining the community of other Jews because we disagree with their religious attitudes and therefore we separate. The Netziv writes as follows: Le'inyan kehilot charediot nifradot, about separate religious kehilot, etzazu kasha kecharavot laguf ha'uma v'kiyuma, asher al pi ro'ot einei echad mimachzikei hadat. Yidmeh sheploni eno mitnaheg al pi darko b'avodat Hashem v'yishbetenu leminut v'yitlachek mimenu v'yirotfim zezeh beheter b'dimyon kozev chas v'shalom. It allows people to think, to become self-righteous and to think that they are frumer than thou and therefore everybody else, yishbetenu leminut, he will consider him an apikoros. And the Tziv writes as if he lived today. And probably the most forceful, the most eloquent expression of Torah tolerance is again by the Netziv. I strongly commend it to you. If you have not done so, get the Hamek Dover, the set of Chumashim with the Netziv, and read his introduction to Bereshit. It is a...